For a lot of parents, it starts with a moment, a concern, a delay, a diagnosis, and suddenly they're thrown into a world where they never expected to enter. They're scared, overwhelmed, and trying to figure out what actually matters before they make the wrong move or lose precious time. So today we're talking about what parents really need to know early and what actually helps, how to cut through the noise. Today, I'm very excited to introduce her. Her name is Lori Unum. Lori is a nationally recognized autism advocate, attorney, and leader in autism services. Her work has helped shape, support, and give awareness and access for families navigating autism. Lori, welcome to the show. I am honored to have you here, and it's a privilege just to have you in our presence today because this is something that's really near and dear to my heart.
Thank you so much, Stacey. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
You're very welcome. Now, let's start here. When a parent first realizes something may be different with their child, there is usually a lot of fear and confusion. What do you think most parents need most in that moment?
They need access to specialty diagnostics, for one thing, and they need to know there's hope. But I recall when my son wasn't developing normally, really, it was the pediatrician at the 18-month-old well child checkup who flag for us, yeah, you need to go see a specialist. This development really is not on the right path, and you need to go see a developmental pediatrician, is what they told us. I had never heard of a developmental pediatrician. I didn't know there was any such thing,
yeah.
But that definitely helped get us on the right track to see a specialist.
Now, what type of diagnostic testing did they do? And was it easy to find that type of doctor? Like, where did you go to actually find a doctor like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. My husband and I were living in Washington, D.C. at that time, and I consider that fortunate because in the metropolitan area, it was easier to find those kinds of specialists than at a lot of places in the country. But even so, we had to wait months and months to get in to see a developmental pediatrician. So there's still a waiting list problem. Now, this was 23 years ago when we were trying to get in to see one. There's still a waiting list problem. But
wow.
A developmental pediatrician or a psychologist who's specially trained in diagnosing autism is the type of professional you want to find.
Now, when families first enter this world, they get flooded with opinions, advice, and pressure. What is the biggest mistake that parents make early on when they're trying to navigate an autism diagnosis?
Well, it really is overwhelming, Stacey. As you say, you get flooded with advice, and there are books out there that say all kinds of different things. I don't know. We tried many, many different things when our son was very young. And was it a mistake to try them? I'm not sure, because going through the process of trying a variety of things, diets, shots, therapeutic interventions, we were then able to narrow it down to the one thing that we thought was really making a difference for him.
Yeah.
And we did that. But so maybe we didn't waste a year getting there, but we were exhausted for a year trying all these different things until we found the one thing that really made the most difference for him.
And what type of process did you have to go through to actually find out what works? Because I'm assuming every child is different. So what works for one child is not going to work for another child. But, can you explain to parents, the process that you went through and how you came to the conclusion that what you're doing was best for your child?
Mm-hmm. Lots of Google research. I'm not a scientist, not a clinician. So, I was out there researching on Google, just like lots of other families are doing. I also had the benefit of very good diagnosticians giving us recommendations for what to try. So, and I read a lot of books in the early days.
Yeah.
And like I said, we tried specialty diets, we tried different supplements and shots and whatnot. And for us, the behavior therapy was the thing that made the difference. But I think, again, I'm glad we ruled other things out as for what would work best for our son.
Right. Now, what do you think they should focus on first instead of going through a lot of different things and kind of being lost in the shuffle? Is there something that you would recommend that they should focus on first?
I do recommend therapy behavior-based therapy. There's a therapy called Applied Behavior Analysis, or ABA, and it is highly effective for individuals with autism, especially young children with autism. And I really encourage parents to check it out as soon as possible after diagnosis. Even some parents, even before, while they're on the waiting list to get in to see a specialist, they'll go ahead and start with some ABA therapy for their child because it doesn't hurt anything. I mean, it's in some ways, it's almost like a very advanced just entering or intervention or tutoring. So it will do nothing but help your child get ahead. Even if they end up not to get an autism diagnosis,
right?
It only helps them get ahead.
Now, for parents who don't know what ABA therapy is, can you go a little bit more in depth to explain what it is and the process?
Yeah. So behavior analysis is a science of understanding why humans do what they do. Actually, I say humans. There's behavior analysis in the animal world as well. But let's talk about humans for today. Just trying to understand why people behave the way they do. Yeah. And if someone wants to change a behavior or if a behavior needs to be changed, how can we help facilitate that change in behavior? So for example, and applied behavior analysis then is just taking those scientific principles that we know about why behave the way they behave and applying them to try to produce a needed change. I mean, that sounds so scientific, you know, mucky, but it's really like, if you think about people typically respond to positive reinforcement, right? That's not that hard to understand, right? And so it's just kind of taking that principle and saying, okay, every time this child does something good or gets an answer right, we're going to intensively reinforce that in a positive way.
Right.
We're going to reinforce it in a positive way that we know is particularly reinforcing for this child. So it's just taking all those scientific principles and applying them in a very deliberate way to get a behavior to change.
I love that. Now, how does it help children build real life skills?
For example, my son Ryan, when he was a toddler, completely lacked the skill imitation. And you're a parent, you know, a lot of what kids learn, they learn by imitating other kids or imitating adults, right? They pick up things. Many children with autism just don't have that skill at all.
Yeah.
And so through ABA, the therapist taught my son what it means to imitate. I was skeptical, honestly, at the very beginning. I'm like, how can you teach someone a very fundamental skill like how to imitate? You know, even if they had to prompt him physically, and if they said touch your head and he didn't imitate and do the same thing, or it wouldn't be touch your head, they would say do this, and if he didn't imitate and do this, well, then they might take his hand and put it up there to help him understand this is the answer we're looking for. Eventually, he would do it on his own. And when he did, oh, they had a party. Ryan, you're so smart. That's exactly right. Here, have a Cheerio, you know, whatever. Whatever is reinforcing for Ryan. Play with your favorite toy for a few minutes because you just did the right thing. And then eventually he gets the idea, all right, this is what they want me to do.
Right.
Then he learns a skill like imitation, which opens up learning a whole host of other skills, like how to tie your shoes or how to use the potty or how to eat with a spoon, all of those types of things.
Wow. I love that. I love that. And that sounds so effective. It sounds like it has, you know, a lot of positive, you know, in that.
Absolutely. It is amazingly effective. And when you really think about what it is, you understand this has to work, right? Because this is, I mean, all they're doing is studying how humans behave and why, and then using those principles. So by definition, it kind of has to work.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's almost, you know, it's very complex. Those who have gotten their doctorates in behavior analysis, there's a lot to it. But at the most simple level, I look at it and I say, this is not rocket science.
Yeah.
You know, we know that people respond to positive reinforcement. We know that people learn through repetition. That's another key component is, you know, some people need to try things 5 times to get it. Some people need 20 times. Some people need 100 times. My son sometimes needed 1,000 times.
Right.
But that's what ABA does, is they say, all right, we're going to keep repeating until we hit that. If it's 1,000, if it's 10,000, whatever it is. And yeah. That's like, frequently kids are in ABA therapy for a lot of hours per week, 20, mm-hmm. 30, even 40 hours per week, which seems crazy. Right? That's like a full-time job.
Yeah.
But if you realize what they're trying to do is have the opportunity for lots and lots of trials, if you will, lots of repetition, mm-hmm. so that they get to the point where it triggers.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Now, why is timing so important when it comes to early support? Because I know for a fact that a lot of parents tend to be in denial at first and they try to look the other way. But the earlier you can spot it and the earlier you can get them help, in my opinion, is better. So in your opinion, why do you feel timing is so important when it comes to early support?
Yeah. Well, your opinion is 100% spot on this. There's no that the earlier you intervene, the better the outcomes. And I sometimes hesitate to harp on that too much because some people can't manage to get a diagnosis when they're 2. They might be 3 or 4 or 5, especially in certain communities, certain socioeconomic statuses. They just don't have the same access to care.
Yeah.
And so I never want those people to feel like, oh, we missed the window. Forget it.
Yeah.
Because it does still work. I mean, it works with adults, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But we all know the brain is most malleable when they're really young. And so if you can get in there and intervene at age 2, start. There is no reason to wait. Because as I said, there's definitely no harm, even if they don't end up to get an autism diagnosis.
Right.
You just are helping them understand how to achieve the skills, whatever it is that they're missing in their repertoire.
Right, exactly. Now, what happens when families wait too long because they're overwhelmed or unsure?
Well, what I like to say is the kid may miss the opportunity for the best possible outcome, right? I mean, if you've got autism is such a huge spectrum to begin with, right?
Yeah.
But let's look at, like, my son's on the very severe end of the spectrum. Profound. And for him, there was just no question that he needed this very intensive intervention.
Yeah.
And he needed a lot of it as soon as we could start. Had we started 2 years later, he still would have made a lot of progress, but yeah. not the same level. And, you know, if a child with if a typical child kind of gains skills, you know, at this level, mm-hmm. climbing up the mountain a little bit, the child with autism is starting down here.
Yeah.
So you need them to gain skills at the same rate. You need them to gain skills at a faster rate so they can catch up to their peers.
Right. I agree.
The earlier you start, the more you give them that opportunity to catch up to peers. Or if they're not the kind of kid that is going to catch up to peers, not all of them do. My son did not. But get him as functional as you can to give him the best life you can.
One of the hardest parts is knowing where to go for trustworthy help. You know, where can families actually go for real help, support, and real education and real, you know, next steps, actually?
That's a great question. What I do now in my professional life, I'm a lawyer by trade, but I gave up the practice of law altogether to work in autism because I feel so passionately about this. I run a nonprofit association called the Council for Autism Service Providers. And it is just an association nationwide of all of these different organizations that serve individuals with autism. So a great place to find a provider who directly provides services is to look on that website, which is casproviders.org. I also want to highlight, we recently spun off a site called thespectrum.org,
mm-hmm.
which is really meant for parents, especially after the child is just diagnosed. And it has a whole host of resources to help parents in those early years. And the best part is a whole series, about a dozen video conversations of parents talking to each other, parents talking to providers, individual with autism, just real, natural, unscripted conversations.
Yeah.
Because I know, I mean, I've been in this world for 23 years now since my son's diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
If I had known then what I know now, it would have been incredibly helpful.
Right.
You don't always run into somebody who has been living in the world.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a way to get a glimpse into that world and just listen in as if you were sitting at the coffee shop with a couple of people who are walking in that.
Oh, I love that. Now, how does the spectrum.org help simplify things for parents?
It's really written in very plain language. Again, I can talk about behavior analysis and the scientific principles underpinning it because I'm 23 years into this, right?
Yeah.
But you know, when you're brand new, I remember when we first started ABA with our son, the therapist kept coming into our house and talking about his program and his targets. And I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I know what the word target means, but I didn't understand what she meant.
Yeah.
So it's really breaking everything down without jargon. Normal people talk. It's a whole, the website, in addition to all these videos where you can just hear natural conversations, it's a bunch of resources like, what should you look for? If you decided you're going to get applied behavior analysis for your child, what should you look for in selecting a provider? Lots of just very simple, non-jargon, real world resources.
Can you share a little about your story? Because you have a really a remarkable story. And I think it's so important that people actually understand that they're not alone in this world, that there are a lot of other people who, you know, have children or have someone in their family or have someone close to them that has autism. And just to share your own experience and what you went through and how you, you know, you've overcome a lot of the crisis and you overcame a lot of the obstacles that you were hit with along your journey. And, you know, how you got to where you are today.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, today I am doing something that I never anticipated doing with my life because it definitely did take a turn a quarter century ago. As I mentioned, I went to law school after college and I clerked for a judge. I moved to Washington, D.C. and I went to work for the U.S. Department of Justice. And I just thought, this is awesome. I love it so much. That's where I met my husband. We're both attorneys. I then left and I went into teaching law school. So I was teaching law school at the time my firstborn child was diagnosed with autism. And I really didn't know what it was. I had heard the word. You know, a lot of us around my age, we knew the movie Rain Man.
Yeah.
I think I had ever seen it, but I knew what it was.
Yeah.
That was pretty much my whole understanding of autism. So it was a very steep learning curve in those early days. And luckily, because he had some really good doctors who diagnosed him and kind of set us on a path of what to do for him to help him as much as we could. You know, we weren't the parents in denial. And for that, I'm grateful. But my husband and I both, I mean, we were sad. Don't get me wrong. I cried. I cried for the life that they were telling me he would not have. But I cried for a short period. And then I said, all right, let's get to work. What can we do to give him the best possible life he can achieve? And so my husband and I said, all right, the doctor said applied behavior analysis. We're going to figure out what that is. We're going to figure out how to get it. Living in Washington, D.C., we were able to find providers. We invited them into our home to explain to us, what is it? How do we start? You know, what's it going to look like? And long story short, they told us all about ABA and what it would look like. And then they told us the price tag. Our son, as I said, is very severely impaired. So it was recommended that he be in ABA therapy for 40 hours a week, which again made me cry, you know, because he's a kid. He's not supposed to be working 40 hours a week. But again, if the doctor said to do it, I was going to do it. So for a 40-hour per week program 23 years ago, they said it was going to cost just a little over $70,000 a year. And the first thing I did was look at my husband and say, well, thank goodness we have health insurance. You know, what would you do if you didn't have health insurance?
Yeah.
Little did I know that at that time, health insurance would not pay for one penny of it.
Wow.
So, you know, there we were just trying to decide, okay, what do we do? We're not wealthy people. We were better off than the average family because my husband and I both worked as lawyers.
Right.
But even then,
that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. It was a backbreaking amount, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But it's also my child. It was our child. And what would you not do for your child, right?
Exactly.
So we decided, okay, we're going to get this therapy for our son. We'll figure it out. We lived on my husband's salary and we used my entire salary as a law professor to pay for his therapy. But and even then, you know, a few years in, we sold our house and we moved to a less expensive house.
Mm-hmm.
To keep it up because we could see that it was working.
Yeah.
But I got to this point. I could not sleep at night thinking about, okay, so we made this work for our child because we're double income lawyer family.
Right.
What is the average family supposed to do?
Exactly.
What if you're a single mom, or what if you don't have a house that you can sell?
Yeah.
And so it really broke my heart just thinking about how it must feel as a parent.
Yeah.
Oh, there's something out there that could undeniably help your child, but you can't get it because you're not rich.
Right.
I mean, that would just, it's hard enough to lose all your hopes and dreams for your child, but then it's just a dagger in the heart to know, oh, there's something you could be doing, but you're not rich.
Yeah.
And just thinking about those children too, those children who wouldn't be able to access the therapy would never get to have their shot at their best possible life. So just kind of tormented by that, we moved back to South Carolina during this period, his early toddler years, where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And once I was back in South Carolina, I just met all these families who knew about ABA, but they weren't able to get it for their child. And one day I kept thinking, somebody should do something about this. Health insurance, pay for it. And one day I was in my kitchen, like, I'm somebody. I'm, you know, I understand the problem because my child is very affected. I've been to law school. I'm a pretty good writer. Maybe I'm that somebody who's supposed to put it all together and try to do something. And so I literally sat down at my kitchen table and wrote a bill that required health insurance to pay for evidence-based treatment for children with autism, including ABA. And I contacted a legislator in South Carolina and I told him what I was trying to do. He didn't know anything about autism. His name was Representative Nathan Valentine. And he said, yeah, that makes total sense. I'll file that bill for you. So that began a very long journey, but I spent a couple of years and worked with a lot of other families in South Carolina, and we got that legislation passed so that health insurance was required to cover therapy for kids with autism. And it became known as Ryan's Law after. So
that's heard of that law.
Have you?
I have, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's under your son's name?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's now, gosh, almost 20 years old because it passed. I wrote it in 2005, but it passed in 2007. So mm-hmm. Almost 20 years old.
Yeah.
And after that, I was still teaching law school. But the national nonprofit Autism Speaks
mm-hmm.
called and said, that is a really good law. That should be the law in every state. I said, yeah. Yes, it should. I'll send you a copy of my Word document here. And they're like, no, we want you to come work for us and you go around and try to get it passed in every state.
Yeah.
So I left my job and went to work for Autism Speaks. And for 10 years, all I did was travel around the country trying to get that law passed in state after state after state.
Wow. I am proud of you. That is amazing.
Thank you.
That is amazing.
Well, it's the kind of thing, like, there are some things that you can't do to help families impacted by autism, but there are some things we can do. And there's, in my mind, there was no reason why it has to be such a devastating financial burden.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I can't take away the emotional toll. There was a lot that I can't take away. But
yeah.
I was like, these are families who are paying for health insurance.
Yeah.
Why are they being financially devastated by this diagnosis.
Exactly.
So now all 50 states require health insurance to cover therapy for autism.
I am so proud of you. I really am.
Well, we have kind of a similar background that way, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We do.
Use what has happened to you and go and advocate and make things better for everyone.
Yes, 100%. You know, April is Autism Acceptance Month, and April 2nd was World Autism Day. Now, for you, why is it important that we keep having this conversation every year? And it shouldn't be just every year. It should be an ongoing conversation that we have frequently and really keep it, because humans tend to have short memories. And we need to really, you know, get the stigmatism out there and you know, make it go away. And really, if they do so much for diabetes on TV, and they show so much for high blood pressure, and they show so much for all these other things, they should be really educating people about autism and have it a clear understanding. Because I guarantee you, there are parents out there that don't even realize, they know something's not right, but they don't even realize that their child has autism.
There's so many reasons to keep autism at the fore every year with the focus in April. One of which is it helps families like mine feel seen and heard, recognized, and that's not insignificant.
Yeah.
But also, as I mentioned, it's such a broad spectrum. And while many more people know generally what autism is now than they did 20 years ago when I was first dealing with it, yeah, way more people know what it is. I mean, it's in the mainstream. There are TV shows about it, all that. But people mostly know one end of the spectrum and not the other.
Yeah.
As, you know, the people who can talk and they're math whizzes or they're music prodigies or their doctors, you know, the good doctor, or, you know, those make very interesting television shows.
Yeah.
We're not making TV shows about people with profound autism.
Yeah.
It's not fun to watch.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for the individuals, for the families. So we have to keep educating to make sure that the full spectrum is recognized, is researched, are provided services. And that's, for me, that's part of the focus of autism acceptance and awareness today.
Yeah.
And one other thing, you mentioned April 2nd being World Autism Awareness Day. In the course of my work over the last 15 years, I've done quite a bit of international outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll go speak at an autism conference in China or in Japan or all over the world, Brazil. There, some of those countries are pretty far behind where we are.
Yeah.
The point that the stigma is still a real issue.
Mm-hmm.
People, families are hiding their children with autism still, yeah, in some of those countries.
Mm-hmm.
And that breaks my heart too.
Yeah, it does. It does.
So to lead a worldwide understanding of autism and help remove that stigma and help families know it's nothing you've done, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. And if you will step out and seek help, there's so much your child could achieve. Like, yeah, some of these children, the thing with ABA, I remember learning this in my early days of research, nearly half of the children that get a good intensive ABA therapy program,
mm-hmm,
will make so much progress, they can go into regular school, mainstream, you know,
yeah,
not even special ed classes, mainstream, but give them that chance.
Yeah, 100%. What do you wish communities understood better about supporting children with autism and their families?
Well, that's such a loaded question. Well, one of the things I wish is that the support would be available throughout the lifespan. I fall prey to this. I talk about children with autism, children with autism, children with autism, but it doesn't go away at 18 or 21. I mean, as I said, some people do so well through the therapy that they will function beautifully, be able to go to school, be able to go to work, be able to drive, but some don't. And so recognizing the breadth of the spectrum and recognizing that some people will need 24/7 care for their entire lives.
Yeah.
So I urge people, I urge communities to recognize that those needs exist across the lifespan.
Yeah.
We've been very engaged. My husband and I founded a nonprofit 15 years ago, which was originally called the Autism Academy of South Carolina. And it was an ABA, a nonprofit ABA center. And it's been renamed. It's now called the Unum Center for Neurodevelopment. The board surprised us with a rename. But just last year, I mean, our nonprofit mission was to serve families across the lifespan. And in recent years, we realized we're not really doing that.
Yeah.
We're serving our kids great with therapy and supporting them, trying to get them back into schools. But once they hit that 18 to 21 range, we're really not. So we expanded our mission and just last year opened an adult residential community, this beautiful 10-acre campus called Unum Place in Lexington, South Carolina. So lucky for my husband and me, it's just 10, 15 minutes from where we live. And our son moved into this fantastic community designed for people like him 1 year ago, and he loves it so much. It's his apartment. And, you know, his younger brother went off to college and got his own apartment. So now Ryan feels like I'm doing what my younger brother did. I have my own apartment. I go home on the weekends a lot of times. Sometimes I stay, sometimes I go home. And it's been amazing. So again, recognizing the full breadth of the spectrum and recognizing the needs over the life.
I love that. I love that. And if there's one thing every parent listening right now needs to hear, especially if they feel scared or overwhelmed, what would that be? What would you say to them?
I would say there's hope and things get better. As long as you get out there and do the best to get your child the services they need, intervene, don't be afraid of it. Things get so much better. We were, when Ryan was little, we got to the point where we couldn't go to a restaurant. We couldn't go to the grocery store. We stopped going to church altogether. He was disruptive. He would scream. He was loud. He would hit. You know, people would glare at you. And I could take the heat from other people. I don't care if they glare at me or not, but it was truly disruptive in a restaurant or in church. It was disruptive.
Yeah.
And we just stopped. It was just easier to stop going. But after years of ABA therapy, where his team, his therapy team, practiced going to a restaurant with him, they practiced going to the dentist, they practiced going to a haircut. They did all of those things to help him understand, yes, you can do this. There's no reason to scream. Here's how we behave. And now we do everything with our son. I mean, we take him to any nice restaurant. He goes on vacation with us. He flies. He goes snow skiing with us. You know, just even though he's still a severely affected individual and he's still mostly nonverbal, he has a very happy life that's really full and that we can enjoy together. So I just hope people understand. I think it's especially tough in those early years. And for us, there was also a spike that was really tough in puberty.
Yeah.
Probably any parent can identify with that, but there was definitely a spike in his aggressive behaviors around puberty. So that was hard too, but it gets better.
I love that. Yeah, it does get better. It takes time. And that's what people have to understand is that things don't happen overnight and it takes time. And as a parent, as a caretaker, it's going to take a lot of hard work. But, you know, with effort and persistence and resilience, you know, anything is possible.
And he, you know, you and I were talking about this before we started recording, but just the meaning that he brings to my life. Sometimes when you've got a little bit of adversity and you kind of change your own trajectory to try to help other people, I just wouldn't trade this life for anything. I mean, this is not what I thought I'd be doing in my 50s. I love what I do, and I appreciate that he has reshaped my priorities and meaning and purpose in life.
Yeah.
And I love him dearly. He's a very special young man. I want to call him a big boy, but he's a young man who just brings tremendous joy and happiness to our family and to everybody he's around.
I love that. Now, if there's one thing or maybe a couple of things you want people to remember from this episode that is you feel is important, what would be some things that you really want people to walk away from this episode and remember?
First, act early if you're concerned, meaning go to your doctor, get a referral to a specialist, check it out and see if it's autism. People are so afraid. They don't want to hear that word, but all it does is help you get on the right path to making things better.
Yes.
Intervene early as much as you can. I'm a big proponent of ABA. Don't be afraid to try things with your child.
Yeah.
Like I know so many families who would just say, oh, it's too hard to go to a restaurant.
Right.
And so they stop. They're not wrong. It's hard, but keep trying, keep trying, keep trying. You know, we're afraid to take him on an airplane. We got kicked off an airplane one time because he was having a meltdown. Was that hard? Yeah, it was hard. We waited a little bit and then we tried again. And now it's fine. It's fine. So try things. Give them the opportunity to succeed.
Right.
You enjoy life fully.
I love it. Now tell us a little about the services that you provide and about everything that you do and where people could find you also.
The Council of Autism Service Providers. We are not a direct service provider. We're an association of direct service providers. So I sit at the helm of this organization and am just honored to have as members all of these organizations that work directly with individuals with autism. I was about to say kids with autism, but these organizations are serving, many of them are serving across the lifespan, not all.
Right.
And if you're looking for a provider, you can go to casproviders.org to see a list of providers state by state. And again, the spectrum.org is such an amazing resource to learn more about ABA, why it works, how you find a good provider, hear moms and doctors and providers and people on the spectrum talk about their experience with it, unscripted, just a natural conversation. And that's such an amazing resource for people who are new to the autism community.
I love it. And where can people find you if they want to reach out to you?
CASPROVIDERS.org on the website. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. Love to hear from people.
I love it. I just want everyone to realize that this is one of those conversations that can truly change lives in a way a parent moves forward. Because when fear meets good information, real support, and the right action, everything can begin to change. And I admire, you know, everything that you've done and how you've made such a huge change in the community of autism. And I am just so proud of everything that you've done. I commend you on, you know, how you overcame all the obstacles in your life. You just rose above the chaos. You hit those obstacles head on. And, you know, you really were able to help your son make his dreams come true. And now you're helping others. And I really appreciate what you do. And I thank you just for being you and everything that you do.
Thank you, Stacey. Thank you so much again for the opportunity to speak to your listeners. I know you have a huge audience of listeners. So I hope we do reach somebody who needs to hear this, somebody who's new to the diagnosis or who's struggling. There's hope. And thank you again for giving me this platform.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for being here. And like I said before, I'm honored to have you and I appreciate you. And thank you once again. And you have a great day.
You too.